If you believe assault is an act, not an adjective, your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Yeah. Good morning, everyone. Man, that just gets you up and punches you right straight in the face, doesn't it? Man, I love that. Whether you like it or not, that rocks. Okay, here we go. Thank you very much, RJ Hinder and crew. Another fine addition. Thank you very much for sending your audience this way. I welcome everybody, good folks listening to RJ Hinder, and incorporated you in with the 2A Radio family. I'm feeling good. So, a little bit of housekeeping, guys. First of all, right here at RBN, Republic Broadcasting, we're always trying to spread the word and get the truth and the information out there to the masses. Well, we could always use a little bit of help from friends. So, for $8, $8, that's it, and it's flat fee, $8, you can get 100 generic RBN cards. I say generic because they don't have anybody's name and title on them that you can hand out. And these are good looking cards. These are not just some sort of cheap thing that came off a laser printer or bubble jet. These are very nice printed cards. Now, I come from a printing background. I was raised in a print shop. I know what good work is and I know what garbage shortcuts are. This is good looking stuff. For $8, you can get 100 of these cards to hand out. You can also, it also comes with a bumper sticker, that's included, as well as a free copy of Aaron Russo's America, From Freedom to Fascism. If you have not seen this particular video, it's a movie, it's a documentary that Aaron Russo did. It was his last project before he died of cancer. And RBN's own Dave Champion happened to be one of Aaron's consultants on this movie, because he goes into a lot of things dealing with taxes as well. It's a very, very encompassing movie. I saw this thing a couple years ago. It is great. And again, Dave Champion, he has his show here on RBN Monday through Friday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon Central Time. He has the hour just before John Stadtmiller comes on. So he had involvement in Freedom to Fascism. And with that being said, $8 is going to get you the 100 business cards, the bumper stickers, and Aaron Russo's Freedom to Fascism. And you can get that one of two ways. You can either send the $8 in to 2251 Double Creek Boulevard. That's two different words. Double, then Creek, I guess three different words, then Boulevard, Suite 302. Okay? That's in Round Rock, two different words, Texas, TX, 78664. Or you can call up. You can call 800-724-2719, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time. 800-724-2719, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time. And you can get all of this, the 100 cards, as well as the bumper sticker, as well as Aaron Russo's copy, From Freedom to Fascism, for $8. So take care of that. Got plenty of news, information, commentary, all that great stuff coming up in the rest of the show. So stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is live. 1-800-313-9443.
All right, guys. You probably hear every now and again the term NFA. NFA, when speaking about guns and gun rights, is called it's a shortened version of the National Firearms Act of 1934. Now, that was an act of Congress passed in 1934 that, in general, imposes a statutory excise tax on the manufacture and transfer of certain firearms and mandates the registration of those particular NFA guns. Now, this act was passed shortly before the repeal of Prohibition, and the act was, it's also in Title II of the Federal Firearms Laws, which is interesting because the Gun Control Act of 1968, which was passed 34 years later, is Title I. However that worked out. Now, all transfers of ownership of registered NFA firearms must be done through the Federal NFA Registry, which is monitored, handled, and controlled by the ATF, Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. The NFA also requires that the transport of the NFA firearms across state lines by the owner must be reported to the Department of Treasury. This function has since been transferred to the Department of Justice, which is all under it's the ATF that you actually have to deal with. So they're the ones that transferred on. Now, a little bit of background here. The purpose of the 1934 National Firearms Act was to regulate what were considered gangster weapons, such as machine guns and hand grenades. So remember the old Tommy gun? Al Capone? Those guys? Really, that's what it was all about. Back then, the U.S. Attorney General, Homer Cummings, recognized that firearms could not be banned outright under the Second Amendment, something that the people today don't seem to recognize. So he proposed restrictive regulation in the form of high tax and federal registration. Originally, pistols and revolvers were to be regulated just as strictly as the machine guns towards that end. But cutting down a rifle or shotgun to circumvent the handgun restrictions by making a concealable weapon was taxed as strictly as a machine gun. Now, conventional pistols and revolvers were ultimately excluded from the act before passage, but the other concealable firearms were not. The language, as originally enacted, defined an NFA firearm as, quote, a shotgun or rifle having a barrel of less than 18 inches in length or other weapon, such as a pistol or revolver, from which a shot is discharged by an explosive if such weapon is capable of being concealed on the person, or a machine gun that includes a muffler or silencer for any firearm, whether or not such a firearm is included in the forging definition. Now, all of that stuff, along with some stuff from 1968, what it was that excise tax that was imposed was $200. That's never changed. Today, 2010, it's still $200. Okay, so really, here are the NFA guns, machine guns. This includes any firearm which can fire more than one cartridge per trigger pull, both continuous full automatic and burst fire, as in like a three-round burst fire, are considered machine gun features. Short-barreled rifles, often referred to as SBRs. This category includes any firearm with a buttstock and either a rifled barrel under 16 inches or an overall length under 26 inches. The overall length is measured from any folding or collapsible stock in the extended position. This category also includes firearms which came from the factory with a buttstock that was later removed by a third party. Short-barreled shotguns. This category is defined by similarly to the short-barreled rifles, but the length of the barrel is 18 inches instead of 16. And the barrel must be smooth bore. The minimum overall length, again, like a rifle, is 26 inches. Suppressors. This includes any portable device designed to muffle or disguise the report of a portable firearm. This category does not include non-portable devices, such as sound traps used by gunsmiths in their shops, which are large and usually bolted to the floor. Included are destructive devices. There are two broad classes of destructive devices, such as grenades, bombs, explosive missiles, poison gas weapons, etc. And any non-sporting firearm with a bore of over 50 caliber, such as a 40mm grenade launcher, often used in conjunction with military rifles. Okay. Now, many firearms with bores over 50, such as a 12-gauge shotgun, are exempt from the law because they've been determined to have a legitimate sporting use. Now, which is interesting because the Second Amendment is nothing to do with sporting purposes. It's all about defense. Now, any other weapons, there are some things in here, smoothbore pistol, a pen gun, a cane gun, short-barreled firearm, short-barreled rifle with smooth bores, firearms that are disguised to be other items, things like that. All of this is in the NFA. You all have to deal with the BATFE. Okay? Now, silencers and machine guns are the most heavily regulated. For example, in ruling 81-4, BATFE declared that any AR-15 drop-in auto-sear made after November 1, 1981 is itself a machine gun and therefore subject to regulation. Okay. While this might seem to mean that pre-81 sears are legal to possess without registration, BATFE closes this loophole in other publications, stating, regardless of the date of manufacture of drop-in auto-sear, possession of such a sear or certain M16 fire control parts is possession of a machine gun as defined by the NFA. Specifically, these parts are listed as A, combinations of parts designed solely and exclusively for the use and converting a weapon into a machine gun, and are a machine gun as defined in the NFA. Now, this is a ruling, this is a regulation that ATF wrote, not part of the NFA law. So you can see, yet again, we're just getting hosed by the man. So, here's a little story for you, entitled Inaccurate ATF Records Endanger Gun Owners. Now, I happen to have an NFA item. I have a silencer, and it is a .22 caliber silencer up to a .30 caliber silencer, so I can shoot my my AR-15 through it, my .22-250, my .308. It's actually large enough bore I could screw the thing onto a 9mm carbine or 9mm subgun and use it for that as well. It is a supersonic silencer. It works well with subsonic rounds as well, quite well. Actually designed for supersonic rounds. Now, continue with this story. This is something I got off of Keep and Bear Arms. It says, we've talked about the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, ATF, many times, including their national firearms registration and transfer records, the official records the government keeps on all NFA-registered weapons, such as machine guns, SBR, suppressors, destructive devices, blah, blah, blah. We've seen their former branch chief make a startling admission. He says, let me say that when we testify in court, we testify that the database is 100% accurate. That's what we testify to, and we will always testify to that. As you probably well know, that may not be 100% true. We've seen ATF fold in the Freinsen case, following an opinion from a leading statistician that the NFRTR is insufficient for criminal proceedings. That means the NFR paperwork, their tracking record. Okay, from a source. You have to note that in a 2003 inspection of a dealer, ATF inspectors found that the dealer had three silencers in an inventory that were not in the NFTR. And they also found corresponding approved Form 3s, which is the form that's used to get it approved. So the dealer was totally doing the right thing, had all of his ducks in a row, but the paperwork at ATF was not up to speed. There was another page which has a brief response from the NFA folks acknowledging there were discrepancies in the NFTR that have been corrected, and also that the Form 3 at issue had been approved by ATF in 2001. This inspection that took place, we just talked about, was 2 years later in 2003. That means there was no record of these particular silencers in the NFTR for at least 2 years. The implications of this are rather profound. Just to walk through one example, suppose a fellow buys a machine gun via the Form 4 process, all is approved, and the seller, not necessarily a dealer, delivers the machine gun, the silencer, whatever, to the buyer. Suppose 5 or 6 years later, there's a house fire and the seller's copy of the approved Form 4 is burned up. The buyer then asks ATF for a duplicate copy. ATF looks at the NFTR and sees there is a record of the machine gun or silencer, whatever it is, but it's still registered to the seller, who by now, let's say they're dead. What happens? Well, it's a good question. And the danger continues. Per the defendant motion in Limeline in the previous mentioned Freinsen case, ATF routinely uses NFTR data to justify seizing and forfeiting firearms it deems to be unregistered or illegally possessed, issuing search and or arrest warrants, producing certificate of non-existence of record, or a CNR, for NFA firearms at criminal trials, which attest that no record of registration for particular firearms can be located in the NFTR, determining that a specific firearm is not registered to a specific person, and for other law enforcement activities such as approving or disapproving applications to transfer of ownership of NFA firearms, and none of that exists. So they take your gear and they throw you in federal prison. That's the system we're dealing with, folks. More to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
You can have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
All right, guys. With that said about the NFA and the regulation of the guns and all that other BS, I want to go over a couple of things. First of all, I'm in the process of negotiating with a company that manufactures shirts. They manufacture T-shirts to get several different T-shirts available for 2A Radio listeners. You could go onto the site and pick the shirt you want, pay for it online, and you'd get it. And these shirts would have some of the following sayings with caricatures of the founding fathers carrying things like AR-15s and AK-47s. Here's a good one. Americans have the right and advantage of being armed, unlike the citizens of other countries whose governments are afraid to trust the people with arms. Spoken by James Madison. Here's another. This country, with its institutions, belongs to the people who inhabit it. Whether they shall grow weary of the existing government, they can exercise their constitutional right of amending it, or their revolutionary right to dismember or overthrow it. Abraham Lincoln, not exactly a founding father, but a president of history nonetheless. From George Washington, he utters, "Firearms stand next in importance to the Constitution itself. They are the people's liberty's teeth." I'm actually having that placed onto my new business cards. Here's another. "The strongest reason for the people to retain the right to keep and bear arms is to protect themselves against tyranny and government," by Thomas Jefferson. So you want to know what the founding fathers had to say about firearms, why they insisted on the Second Amendment? These are the reasons. Listen up. Here's another from James Madison. "A government that does not trust its law-abiding citizens to keep and bear arms is itself unworthy of trust." And then here's another. This is not from the U.S. This is not from a founding father. It says, "Amongst the many misleads of the British rule of India, history will look upon the act depriving a whole nation of arms as the blackest." That uttered by Mahatma Gandhi. So, yesterday, I was covering a story, actually it was an email that was being distributed by the National Association for Gun Rights, headed by a fellow by the name of Dudley Brown. And I readily admitted, I have no idea who the National Association of Gun Rights are. I have no idea who Dudley Brown is. So I can't really support this guy or the organization, nor can I slam it because I know nothing about it. And I just don't want to sit here ignorantly and start spewing off yay praises or, you know, boo negatives. So I got a couple of emails. Here's one. Good morning, Bill. Dudley Brown is the founding principal of Rocky Mountain Gun Owners, RMGO.org. I have belonged for many years, and as far as RMGO is concerned, I'm mighty pleased with the group's efforts in Colorado. Historically, they have been a rabid dog and no-compromise gun-related lobby for the interests and active gun owners here in Colorado. The defining moment of RMGO, I feel, was when the concealed carry law was about to be passed due largely to Dudley's efforts, and then suddenly the Columbine fiasco appeared. And the governor back then had the concealed carry issue cause it to become dead in the water. Then we picketed every venue that governor, a personal friend of President Shrub Bush, picketed every venue that governor was to speak at, including all blizzards, rain, all security-related logistical situations that could face us. We consistently had between 200 and 500-plus folks protesting at his public appearances due to, again, Dudley's efforts and communication web. Another issue was reciprocity in the different venues in the states, as well as between the states themselves, again, Dudley. All in all, Dudley has been a most beneficial asset to the pro-gun interest here in Colorado. He might be worth interviewing. Thanks for all you do, Bill. Attaboy, Ken Dingman. He's out of Deer Trail, Colorado. By the way, Deer Trail, Colorado just sounds like a cool place. So I sent an email to RMGO asking if I could speak with Dudley, maybe meet with him next week at the SHOT Show, and possibly do an interview. I'm waiting on a return email from that. Here's another email. Bill, I am ditching my Mossberg 590 for Remington 870. The Surefire forend that I ordered fits the older model 590 and not the new model 590. They told me that Mossberg can get me the parts, and after two calls to Mossberg, their customer relations is crap. They can't figure out what I need. I'm done with them. Surefire has helped me return the 594, and I ordered for an 870 forend. I'm going to trade the 590 for a well-equipped 870 with my local gun shop owner. And this is from Eric Severson, who called in about Appleseed last week. And he says, since I'm coming out for Appleseed for the 6th and 7th, not doing much on the 5th. You want to get together and do some shotgun training? Home defense is my priority. Let me know, Eric. So, hear ye. I am a much bigger fan of the 870 than I am of the Mossberg 500s or 590s. They just seem tougher. I've addressed it before on this show. Used to rent these things out for classes. And at the end of class, we used to fix the Mossbergs and clean the Remingtons. So, good on you. Eric, I'll shoot you an email back about my availability on the 5th. Everybody stay tuned. Be back right after these words.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The two-way radio show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
All right. Okay, so we're going to talk for a little while here about the attack. It's a campaign, really, to discredit defensive handgun carry. Now, we're going to start out of Washington, D.C. This was released 2 days ago by the Violence Policy Center's division known as Concealed Carry Killers, CCK, they like to call it. Okay, concealed handgun permit holders have killed at least 9 law enforcement officers in addition to 108 private citizens, including 13 shooters who killed themselves after an attack, since May 2007, according to the latest update of Concealed Carry Killers, a Violence Policy Center online resource that tallies news reports of such killings. So, the website is located at vpc.org/ccwkillers.htm. It's updated monthly to include new fatal shootings since May 2007 by concealed handgun permit holders and any changes in the legal status of permit holders facing criminal charges. Now, any concealed handgun permit holder, any holders who are eventually acquitted of their alleged crimes are not included in the tallies maintained on the site, although the facts surrounding the shooting are detailed. Of course, because that's to further their own agenda. VPC, the VPC website, categorizes 68 incidents, which occurred in 20 states, and offers detailed descriptions of each incident. Some incidents may fit into multiple categories. Of these incidents, 13 were murder-suicides involving firearms, and 11 were mass shootings, three or more victims. That claims as many as 11 lives at a time. Law enforcement officers were killed in Alabama, Florida, two incidences, Idaho, Ohio, Pennsylvania, two incidences, and all of the law enforcement killings were committed with a gun. Private citizens were killed in Alabama, California, Colorado, Florida, Idaho, blah, 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 blah. All but one of the killings were committed with a gun. Violence Policy Center Legislative Director Kristen Rand states the following. When the National Rifle Association launches its state-by-state campaign for lax concealed handgun laws, it made this promise. People who get permits in states which have fair right to carry laws are law-abiding, upstanding community leaders who merely seek to exercise their right to self-defense. To the contrary, concealed handgun permit killers, holders are killing people over parking spaces, football games, and family arguments. Let me tell you something here, Kristen Rand. Have you kept any of the statistics at all? At all? On people that you believe should carry guns. That's law enforcement and military. How many people in 2007 have been otherwise murdered by law enforcement and military? And not, we're not talking like necessarily on duty, just off duty. How many of those people have committed some sort of homicide with their guns? Because that's all you say people should have. Police and military, it's all the people should have guns, right? Now, we'll talk a little bit about an article that was written by Kurt Hoffman. He said, one of the latest tactics employed by the anti-self-defense lobby is finding every anecdote of concealed carry licensee behavior as being bad and pointing to it as evidence that legalized concealed carry is a threat to the public. Oh, also for VPC, how many lives were saved by those CCW holders? You have any of those statistics? The answer is no. Actually, the answer is probably yes, but there's no way you're going to release that. Okay, continuing. Thus, we have the Brady campaign's reported crimes and misdeeds by concealed weapons licensees and permit holders. The Coalition to Stop Gun Violence's Ordinary People, the implication being apparently that ordinary people shouldn't carry guns, but law enforcement are the only ones who are extraordinary enough to be able to do that, because they can be trusted more than the rest of us. And also, most recently, the VPC's Concealed Carry Killers. All three campaigns to try to discredit the self-defense concealed carry campaign. Now, I'm not normally much of one for arguing about statistics as part of the gun rights versus gun laws debate, but that's because I don't believe that any person's right to an effective means of defending his life, family, and liberty can legitimately be required to depend on the good behavior of others with guns. In other words, if every other private citizen, if every other private citizen to carry a gun subsequently used that gun for evil, that has zero bearing on my right to be equipped for self-defense. Still, with this foreseeable citizen disarmament lobby reduced to hysterically pointing to a trickle of anecdotes about concealed carry licensees behaving badly. As evidence that armed citizens are a danger to society, it seems worthwhile to demonstrate how badly the numbers fail to bear their arguments out. Happily, that's rather easily done. Columnist A. Barton Hinkle did so admirably in his Gun Control Advocacy Play Fast and Lose article. Now, consider this statistic. Concealed handgun permit holders have killed 107 people since 2007, according to these groups. That news from the Violence Policy Center in D.C. sounds pretty bad until you put it into context. How many Americans have been issued a permit to carry a concealed weapon? Well, the VPC doesn't say, and it's probably impossible to pin down a precise number because records are kept on a state-by-state basis and reporting criteria differ from state to state. But NRA estimates put the number in the neighborhood of 5 million as of a couple of years ago. The NRA adds that permit applications have jumped 50% since the 2008 elections, which seems borne out, at least in the majority of CCW states. At present, there are 211,435 active permit holders just in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Just this year, Virginia courts have granted more than 62,000 permits. Now, continuing with this article, I've been considering writing about this topic for a while, ever since the VPC started its Concealed Carry Killers campaign, but held off because I couldn't find even a base estimate for the number of concealed carry permits in circulation. Let's stick with 5 million, ignoring the spike in permit issuance in many states in the last year and a half. Now take the VPC's claim that there have been 107 killings. Note, by the way, that we can't call it 107 murders. This number includes suicides and also killings for which there have not been murder convictions and are thus possibly justified in self-defense. Note, also, that we're not talking about 107 killers. Some of the individuals killed more than one person. That gives us 107 killings, of which some are suicides, over the course of over 2.5 years, by around 5 million licensees. That comes down to 2.14 deaths per 100,000 permit holders. Compare that to the general population of the U.S., and let's round it down to 300 million, and look at only homicides over the last 2.5 years. That number actually over the last 2 years, half a year less than the period over which VPC gleans its own data, that number tends to be fairly stable at around 15,000 per year, giving us 30,000 over 2 years. Divide that amongst 300 million people, that's 10 murders per 100,000, or well over 4.5 times the homicide rate plus suicide rate for people with concealed carry licenses. In other words, the anti-self-defense lobby smear campaign, notwithstanding statistics, show that concealed carry licensees are vastly less inclined to criminal violence than the general population. Another reason I rarely approach gun rights advocacy from this angle is that I don't believe in licensing the carrying of firearms. In submitting to a licensing requirement to carry a firearm, we undermine our own case that the keeping and bearing of arms is a constitutionally guaranteed fundamental human right. Still, Vermont and Alaska seem unlikely to annex the rest of the states anytime soon, and few states seem to be on the verge of joining those two in their constitutional enlightenment, so licensed carry is apparently what we're stuck with for the time being. The reason for that, guys, is money. Financial revenue coming in. It's a revenue-generating SOB. Because the states, the counties, they get money in for processing these licenses. It's also another thing about control. They're controlling whether or not you can have a gun, so it's yet another version of gun control. Continuing, Kurt Hoffman added to that article with this one just today. Put it up actually late last night. Now, it's entitled Licensed Defensive Handgun Carry, Are We Doing It Wrong? Toward the end of Monday's column, the one I just finished, I made an observation about the licensing of defensive handgun carry. Another reason I rarely approach gun rights advocacy from this angle is I don't believe in licensing the carrying of firearms. In submitting to a license requirement to carry a firearm, we undermine our own case that the keeping and bearing of arms is a constitutionally guaranteed fundamental human right. That's what he said. Okay, so as gun rights advocates, we argue that the Second Amendment exists to protect an inalienable right, one indeed that shall not be infringed. At the same time, though, we have endeavored to persuade the states successfully in the majority of states to allow us to ask and pay for a license with us, which licensed us the means to defend our lives and our families with a concealed handgun. Our success, in other words, has taken the form of reducing the bearing of arms to a fundamental from a fundamental right to a privilege, because we must ask for it and pay for it. Many court decisions have said you cannot charge somebody for a right. You cannot, the government has absolutely no authority to regulate a right or charge anyone to do anything with it. In asking for that privilege, we have lent implicit legitimacy to the denial of that which we should demand as free citizens. Yes, I know that most states have shall-issue permitting systems rather than may-issue, meaning that an applicant who meets the requirements for issuance for a license cannot, in theory, be denied the license. Sure, that's better than giving some police chief or sheriff the power to arbitrarily require someone to be defenseless while in public, but it still is an acceptance of our rights, which are something granted by a governing authority based on our meeting the conditions the government imposes to exercise said right. Does that sound like shall not be infringed to you? In only two states, Vermont and Alaska, can citizens legally carry a concealed handgun without first asking permission. And recent correspondences with a friend, this friend told me about being arrested decades ago for carrying a handgun without a permit. Permits, of course, being impossible for regular people to obtain back then. At that time, though, carrying a handgun without a government-issued permit was, in most jurisdictions, a misdemeanor. He pointed out to me that now, through our progress, has been brought upon us to the point where legally carrying a firearm is, again, in most jurisdictions, a felony requiring, by federal law, the denial of one's ability to so much as legally touch a firearm for life. There's an old joke in which, to be brief, a man asks a woman if she'd be willing to sleep with him for $1 million. She probably would. He then shows her $100 bill and says, let's go. Deeply offended, the woman asks him, what kind of person you think I am? He replies, my dear, we've already established what kind of person you are. Now we are merely haggling over the price. It's a droll little joke, but the underlying theme is perhaps not so funny. The moment a woman enters into negotiations over the price of what would otherwise have been a priceless gift to be shared with a lover, she is degraded to merely commodity to be sold to a customer. Restoring it to priceless gift status becomes enormously difficult. It seems to me that similarly, in our willingness to enter into negotiations about what conditions are to be imposed on the granting of liberties that already belong to a free people, we have, in the words of the man in the joke, already established what kind of people we are. Not free citizens who command their public servants, but supplicants who ask the government for a few crumbs of freedom when it suits them to give us a bit more leash. The further we proceed down that road, the harder it will become to return to being truly free citizens, and the less likely that can happen without bloodshed. I have to ask you, if bloodshed comes about in this country through a new armed revolution, I don't want to call it the Second American Revolution because that was really the Civil War, but through the new armed revolution, It'll happen because the government, different states and the federal government, are on a path pushing we the people, pushing us and forcing us and pushing us and forcing us against our will, against what we know is right, and against what we stand and believe for, stand for and believe in, I should say. If there is an armed revolution in this country, it's going to be because the governments of this country, be it state or most likely federal, have pushed us to the brink of where there is no other option but to succumb to their will. I do not answer to my dog. I am the master. My dog answers to me, or there's repercussions. Those in public office are our dogs. They answer to us. We do not answer to them. That it's been turned around and we've been answering to them must come to an end, must stop, and must be reversed before armed American revolution. Support your local militia. Stay tuned, guys. More to come.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Back off, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong if this is not when you belong.
All right, guys. So here is something to that we really need to be concerned about. It's not directly related to guns. What it's related to is politicians and how they do things. I've told you before, there's one sure sign to know that an elected official or public official of any kind, especially at the federal level, is lying to you or trying to deceive you for ulterior motives, purposes that are not out in the open. And that that absolutely ultimate telltale sign is this: when they're speaking in public. Anytime they're doing that, they're untrustworthy, period. Now, one of the things that we've been dealing with is this ridiculous idea of global warming. This campaign, Al Gore might not have invented the internet, but he did invent global warming. People have made billions of dollars on this, like they did on this Y2K garbage. The de facto President Obama feels that as the world's largest economy, America bears our share of responsibility in addressing climate change. Therefore, America must pay for the financing that helps developing countries adapt, particularly the least developed. Now, of course, I said that with no Negro dialect, as Harry Reid described Obama's speech pattern. Listen to this. The bitter winter affecting much of the Northern Hemisphere is only the start of a global trend towards cooler weather that is likely to last for 20 or 30 years, say some of the world's most eminent climate climatologists they are. Their predictions, based on analysis of natural cycles and water temperatures in the Pacific and Atlantic Oceans, challenge some of the global warming orthodoxy's most deeply cherished beliefs, such as claimed that the North Pole will be free of ice in the summer by 2013. According to the U.S. National Snow and Ice Data Center in Colorado, Arctic summer sea ice has increased by 409,000 square miles, or 26%, since 2007. And even the most committed global warming activists don't dare to dispute this. It is fact. So we've got cap and trade. We've got basically new ways to tax the living hell out of the U.S. economy, individuals and corporations, and we've got them mandating that we're going to have to change the way that we do things to go green, so helpful to the planet a very short period of time, thus bankrupting several industries and putting hundreds of thousands out of work, and almost everyone in financial dire straits unless you are off the grid. That is what we're facing now. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Stay tuned for the Lenman News Hour coming up next, followed later by the Ernest Hancock Show.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.